There's a traditional story of Francis of Assisi and Maseo, one of his brothers, one of the mendicant friars. They were on a journey from town to town, and as usual, they begged for their daily bread. Francis would take one street, and Maseo would take the next. Now, Francis was small and short, and I'm told that he looked very much the part of a beggar. Maseo, on the other hand, was tall and handsome. And you can guess that Francis got scraps, and Maseo landed a whole loaf of freshly baked bread. They met at a fountain outside of town to share what they had collected or what they had been given. And Maseo took note of what was lacking. He said, "No meat, no vegetables, no knife to cut the bread." Francis, as he broke and shared the bread, could only exclaim joyfully, "We are not worthy of this vast treasure. Bread, a table of stone, clear water, and God to serve us." Two perspectives, one of scarcity and one of abundance. Now, we've heard another story this morning. It's told in all four Gospels. The version that I precede with the children has the little boy. He's not mentioned in the other three. But five little loaves and two fish, and how they became food for thousands in the hands of Jesus. It's a story that reminds us of other stories, the manna that fell from heaven to feed the people of Israel during their long wilderness journey. The place in our story is said to be remote, a wilderness-like place, and the whole scene is in keeping with Matthew's theme of Jesus as the new Moses. And then there's another story from the Hebrew Scriptures, a story of the prophet Elisha, who fed 100 men with 12 barley loaves, and there were leftovers that time too. Now, the people listening to Jesus would have known these stories. They would have known them rather far better than we do. And many would have seen him as a great prophet, perhaps even the one promised as greater than Moses after that day was over. So there's more than eating going on in this story. Now, you've heard me say in introducing the gospel reading that Jesus had just got the news that John the Baptist had lost his head. And the text says that when Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Now cast your mind back to the last time that you were really, really sad. After the death of someone very close to you, perhaps. After you lost your job, or you didn't get the job that you were really, really hoping for, after you had to stop driving or move out of the house that you loved. What you needed, I would guess, and what you wanted most was to just get away, to be quiet, to be still, to have no one bother you, to be able to reflect on the sadness within. And you find a quiet place, and suddenly it's invaded by scads of people. Perhaps you wanted to slip into a church and sit in the back pew, as someone in this congregation told me they like to do downtown at their noon hour. And you notice that, in fact, there's a wedding going on. The hillside where you retreated is invaded by noisy hikers. How would we react? Jesus' reaction is all the more remarkable. He has lost John, his cousin, his colleague. In fact, he lost him in a way that is ominous for Jesus. And yet, when he tries to slip away for quiet, the crowds discover the place and they throng around him. And his reaction is neither anger nor frustration, but compassion. He translates his sorrow over John and perhaps his sorrow over himself into sorrow for them, the New Testament scholar N.T. Wright says. Before the visible and the powerful works of healing and feeding, first comes the invisible and the powerful work of the transformation of his feelings into love for those in need. The text says he was moved with compassion. Now, maybe you have come into this story of Jesus because you have been touched by that compassion. Personally, seen it in others, seen it in action. And I think many of us stay in that story because we know that that compassion is the key to the healing of the breaches in ourselves, in our lives, and indeed in our world. Compassion brings us close to the heart of God and God's intention for all creation. Compassion is, in fact, what we are made for. And somehow we know that, even if we can't quite put it into words. Now, thinking about this has led me to see the intentions of the disciples in this story quite differently than I had before. Because one of the things I did was read an old sermon that I preached on this very passage on maybe 6 years ago today or something like that. And I must say that I thought then that the suggestion they made that Jesus send the people away to the villages to buy food for themselves, that suggestion came because they were ready to call it a day. They were tired. And perhaps one of them would go into one of the nearby villages and buy enough food for themselves, and they would build a campfire and relax before bedtime. And I don't think that any of us would think that that was unreasonable. But what if seeing how Jesus cared for people and cared for them, they were concerned for people too. What if that compassion had already caught them up? Would it not be good then to send them away, the people, so that they could go and buy food now, rather than getting hungry here, miles away from anywhere, and then having difficulty getting to where they were going? Now, I'm certain that God is delighted when people come up with ideas that show they are thinking of the needs of others. But often what God does is take those ideas and do something really startling with them. And so he says that if you really care for them, why don't you give them something to eat? Our small idea of how to care for people gets bounced back at us with what seems like an absolutely huge and impossible proposal. And we protest because we can't do it. We haven't got the time, we haven't got the energy, we haven't got the talent, we just don't have what it will take. Jesus' assumptions, like those of St. Francis, were absolutely different. If the disciples saw scarcity, Jesus saw plenty. He looked at the very same situation, and he saw plenty of possibilities, plenty of food. Jesus knew that wherever there was plenty of God, there would be plenty of everything else. We have only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. We have only. Ah, that's the next step, you see. It's typical of how God works. By hanging around Jesus, you have an idea. It's a little fuzzy, perhaps, but you want to care for people. Jesus' way seems impossible, but you're prepared to give him the little bit that you've got if it will do any good. Of course, it means that you might go hungry yourself, but once the power of Jesus' compassion has you in its grip, the flow carries you along. It's difficult to describe what Jesus does with what we give him. Imagine, if you will, standing there in a crowd numbering 5,000 men, women, and children, and a small lunch. Jesus took it. He looked up to heaven, gave thanks, and broke the loaves. Passed out, they served everyone. And there were 12 baskets of leftovers. I think this miracle story is really a parable presented as a drama. The kingdom of heaven is like this. Whenever we get close enough to Jesus to figure out what he's up to and to offer help, we blunder in with our ideas. We offer what little we have, and Jesus takes our ideas, our loaves, our fishes, our money, energy, our time, our love, our artistic gifts, our skill with words, our skill with tools, whatever we have to offer. And he holds them up before his Father in prayer and with blessing, and then breaking them so they are ready for use. He gives them back to us to give to those who need them. And we will be absolutely amazed at what God can do with the bits and pieces of the meager resources that we have offered up. And we will be amazed at the varied faces of compassion that are shown among us for the lonely, the struggling, the crying on the inside, the proud, the bursting to tell their good news to somebody, the scared, the weary, young, old, rich, and poor people, the people sitting in our pews. And such compassion can never be contained by our walls. It was never meant to be. And so it bursts forth from our lives to those who we touch. And there are hugely practical implications, too. There would be enough money to eradicate deficits. There would be sufficient teachers to staff the Sunday school without arm twisting. The list of volunteers for clean, paint, and repair days would be as long as our proverbial arms. And all the people who have served long and faithfully, if they wanted, they could be given time off for such good behavior. The problem with miracles is that we tend to get mesmerized by them, focusing on God's responsibility and forgetting about our own. They appeal to the part of us that is happy to let God feed the crowd, to let God save the world, to let God do it all. What we have to offer is not enough to make any difference. So we hold back, looking after our own needs and looking for God to help those who cannot help themselves. Sitting in the crowd, we wait, holding on to our own little loaves of bread. They're not much. They wouldn't go far. God will provide. Let God provide. No. Stop waiting for a miracle and participate in one instead. No one knows what really happened. It seems clear to me there was more to eating than eating. What he said that day, he says to us today. They need not go away. You give them something to eat. If that scares you, if that makes the loaves that you have and I have seem like nothing at all, we have only to remember, he says, bring them to me. Amen.